Thank you. Thank you all for coming to this session. What I'm going to share with you today is how we are using some novel geospatial methods to add information, contextual clues to those locations where children are getting poisoned by lead. I do not have any relationships to disclose, but I do have several things I'd like to acknowledge. First of all, this project is supported by the Akron Children's Hospital Foundation in Akron, Ohio, and the technical and equipment support is through the GIS Health and Hazards Lab at Kent State University. Okay, so currently the greatest challenge to eliminating childhood lead poisoning is actually finding a means of primary prevention. The CDC defines primary prevention as interventions that reduce or eliminate exposure or risk factors before the onset of disease. And at least in the county that I'm working in, basically everything happens reactionary. So a child, the only way that public health or medical professionals get involved is if a child has an elevated blood lead level. But at that point, the damage could already be done. So one of the ideas for this project is to try to find ways to intervene before that exposure occurs. Okay, so the location that I'm working in is Summit County, Ohio, and if you're not familiar with that, it's south of Cleveland. It's actually, the specific city I'm working in is Akron, and that's home of LeBron James. It has a population of about 200,000 people, and the area and the county surrounding Akron is suburban, kind of moving into a rural. And also of note with this study is Akron is home to about 500 to 600 new resettled refugees, mostly from East Asia, every year since 2008. So that's definitely a population that kind of affects the results of the study. Okay, so currently the CDC says that about 500,000 children have an elevated blood lead level, and that's defined as a level above 5 micrograms per deciliter, although they do have the caveat that there is considered no safe level of blood lead. This equates to about 4 million children living in homes that put them at risk. And within Summit County, the Ohio Department of Health in 2010 estimated that only 15% of the children that are considered at risk based on housing age were actually tested for lead. And what you see on the right there is a map that I made. It's one neighborhood in Akron, and I coded the parcels by housing age. So those that are orange were built before 1950, and those that are yellow were built before 1978, and the green were after 1978. Now the reason why I did this is because this is considered the primary risk factor in a lot of studies that use geospatial technologies and GIS. But if we use that as our risk factor, we're not eliminating a whole lot of homes in Akron, Ohio. In fact, 85% of the houses in Akron, Ohio were built before 1978. And I probably don't need to say this to this group of people, but the reason why 1978 is an issue is because that's when lead paint was banned in the United States. So other risk factors of lead poisoning in children are minority populations, those that are in low-income families or living in poverty, those with a parental occupational exposure to lead. Soil and lead is actually a large risk factor, and some research is actually showing that soil and lead is even more prominent than housing age. Being a resettled refugee, you have a higher risk of lead poisoning. And living proximate to a lead smelter or former lead smelter or other source of industrial emission. And also there are cultural exposures. So some food products, the packaging in food products, or some makeup and jewelry that can actually contain lead. Health outcomes of lead poisoning, again, I probably don't need to go over this with you, but we have severe cognitive impairment, lowered IQ, lower achievement in schools. We also have behavioral problems such as ADHD. Some studies, several, have pointed to increased delinquent behavior and incarceration rates. Now, if you think about all of those health outcomes, those are pretty serious outcomes. And what they kind of result in is reduced earning potential for that individual for the rest of their lives. Okay, the specifics of the data that we extracted from the electronic medical record system at Akron Children's Hospital. So what we did was we took all of the children that had a lead test done from the middle of 2012 to the end of 2014. We had over 12,000 records, as you can see. The number of patients with an EBL, or elevated blood lead level, was 439, which equates to about a 3.6% prevalence. Among the patients with an EBL, we identified 7 different races, and this is according to the coding within the health medical record system. It doesn't exactly translate to census variables. We also found that there were 31 different languages spoken. And if you think about that from a health services perspective, that's a lot of different languages to provide interpretive services and to provide health education materials. And within this population, over 79% had a change of address, at least one change of address. So when I compared the prevalence rates for different races and the language spoken and address change, you can see that up on the screen. And as compared to the white or Caucasian population, African Americans and blacks had 1.5 times more likely to have an EBL. The Asian population was 3.5 times more likely. With the language spoken, there were several languages that only had a few people that spoke them, so I didn't include them in the analysis. But the Nepali population actually had 361 people, and of those, they were almost 5 times more likely to have an EBL compared to English speakers. I also kind of lumped together all of the non-English, compared them to English, and they were about 3 times more likely. Looking at those that had an address change, those with an address change were about 1.7 times more likely to have an EBL. Okay, the next step was I took the addresses for the EBLs and I geocoded them within GIS, and then I did something called a kernel density estimation. So what you see on the right is a map of that, and the darker the color means the more concentrated of the EBLs. On the left, I wanted to show you some of the kind of issues with the data, and anytime you extract data out of a medical record system, it is a challenge, because this data is for medical purposes. It's not for research intentions. So sometimes when you ask for certain things, they look at you like, you want what? You want addresses? All their former addresses, really? Anyway, so for some of these patients, they have multiple tests, multiple lead tests, especially if they have an elevated lead test and they have to have another one to show that it's going down. Well, you can look at the bottom. 5 patients actually had 8 tests done. So what I had to do for those that had multiple tests is I actually extracted the highest test results. And then I had to go back into the data set, and I had date ranges for all of their address changes, and I had to find where they lived at the time of that test result. Okay, so as I showed before, there was an increased prevalence among some of the races, and I wanted to understand the population a little bit more. So this is a spatial exploration of the data. You can see there's red contours of those EBLs, and I overlaid them on top of, for all of the test results, people of the different races. So on the left you see the African American population, so that's kind of where they're living, and you can see where the EBLs are. In the middle we have the Asian population, and this is speaking to those resettled refugees, because they're actually congregating in one particular neighborhood. They're actually being placed there. And so you can see that there's a nice cluster right there. And then the white Caucasian population is more dispersed, and there are some spots where we have an EBL, but we don't have any of the white Caucasian population living. I also wanted to understand that housing age as a risk factor comparison with the EBLs. So I mapped out for the whole city of Akron the housing age. And in blue, it's kind of faint blue, are the EBLs. And you can see, yes, there are clusters of EBLs over, houses that are older, but we also have quite a few houses that are older where we're not seeing an EBL. So to me, that kind of makes me go back to the data and say, what am I seeing in this data? Why am I not seeing these clusters here? And it could be an oversampling of the refugee population, because we know that when they come into the country, they have to have a health exam, and part of that is a blood lead test. So that's something incredibly important to know about your data when you go to map it. The other thing is that there could possibly be cold spots, and this, from an intervention perspective, is really important to know where our screening rates are low, and this might be identifying some of those low screening rates. The other thing I wanted to know is, are we going to see clusters within a cluster? So if I do analysis on a smaller spatial extent, am I going to see clusters? And what I've done is the very thing. So on the left, within that box, you move over to the right, I actually zoomed in and I transformed, kind of flipped it around to try to maintain confidentiality of the patient record. And then I also zoomed in on one street segment. So on the bottom right, that cluster there was actually the result of 7 elevated blood lead test results. There were 10 children tested on that street segment. 7 had elevated results. But 2 of those results were actually at the same house over a year apart. So to me, that signifies that there's a possibility that one family lived there, a child had an elevated blood lead level, they moved out. Perhaps they were evicted, perhaps they were scared and they moved out, and then another family moved in and potentially another child was poisoned. Okay, so to bring in some of these other technologies that I hinted about, one of them is called spatial video. And what we do in spatial video is we take sports cameras. So they're designed for extreme sports. You can put them on your helmet and ride your bike around. But we're not doing that. We're putting them on the sides of the cars. And these cameras that we use, it's called a contour camera. It's really cool because it has an internal GPS. So it collects the GPS location every second. So as you drive through a neighborhood, you're actually recording what you're seeing, but you're also recording the location. So you can extract the GPS track, import it into GIS, look at where you were, and look at what's going on in the environment as you were driving in those places. And on the right, that's the interface that comes with the camera, and it shows you a Google map of where you are. This particular house is one that was vacant. That's why I'm showing it on the screen. And we went around with some environmental health professionals that are informed in lead risk assessment, and they actually use the XRF machine to show us kind of lead-based paint, what it looks like, kind of what are the characteristics are on that house. And I used this spatial video to create something called an environmental lead index. So a lot of these things that I've heard and read about when it comes to a property and lead poisoning were very visual. I thought, well, that's something you could probably see in a video. And so this is actually something I created for a neighborhood in Cleveland, Ohio that was in a former lead smelter neighborhood. I looked at these variables and characteristics, and I coded each parcel for this. I added in the age of the building, because that's an important factor, and then I also added in the distance from the former lead smelter to create this index. And this was really cool, and I was really happy, but I had no way of testing whether or not it actually was representative until I moved into working in Akron. So what we did was, using a technology called a spatial video geonarrative, or SVG, basically what this is we do the spatial video driving through the neighborhood, but we also ask someone to join us that either lives in the neighborhood or that works in an area that we're interested in. So what we do is basically we collect a geonarrative, it's an interview while we're driving through, so they talk about the environment from their perspective or their experience. And usually the participant actually leads the drive. If I were to say, can you show me a home that has evidence of lead-based paint, or that a home that contributed to a child having an elevated blood level, they will direct us around. And that's exactly what we did with three health professionals. And what we found was the information is spatially specific, and that they would talk about what they were seeing, but then they also talked about things that were spatially inspired. So maybe it wasn't actually in what they were looking at, but they said, you know what? This reminds me of something I saw over on the other side of town. It also provides an access to tacit or institutional knowledge. So if you're talking with a neighborhood resident, this is stuff that they know about their neighborhood because they've lived there. It's not something that they read in a book, they learned, or they saw online. It's just stuff that they know, and you can actually get access to that information because you're using the environment as a trigger for their ideas. And we also had access to institutional knowledge from the health professionals who they've been working in this area for 10, 15 years. This isn't something that you're going to read about in a manual, but it can actually be used as a training tool for other health professionals moving into this field. We also had access to ephemeral data, so information, data, things, visual characteristics that are here one day, but maybe not there the next month, the next year. We are currently recording video every 3 months in the same neighborhood so we can do a change over time. Okay, so I did arrive with three health professionals. I looked at the content of their narrative, transcribed it, and I found several themes that came out. And this is evidence of, I'm showing some images kind of corroborating what they're saying. On the top, it says the leak started at the ceiling because a lot of them actually talked about water intrusion, which isn't something that I had read in the literature, but the importance of the process and how water actually starts to erode the paint. The leak started at the ceiling, paint flaking, which is a hazard because when you walk across it, it pulverizes into dust, which gets tracked into the house. And that is the start of lead poisoning with the kids playing on the floor. And then in the bottom, she was actually talking about bare dirt. She said the other issue for home is the bare dirt because over the years, chips have fallen into the dirt. And the dog walks through that, so the dog can bring that into the living room. And in doing a kind of rough content analysis on those three narratives, I found several themes that came out. We actually looked at 16 different properties, and these are the characteristics. The peeling paint was mentioned for all 16. Original features were mentioned for 15. Exposed soil for 12. Six of them had a gravel driveway, which if you think about another source of lead poisoning as the fallout from when we had leaded gasoline, that could possibly be a source. The drip line was exposed. That's the area right along the house where the water drips off of the siding. And there was also 11 mentions of water damage and 5 evidences of play spaces where there are kids' toys, jungle gyms, swing sets, kind of showing that there are kids living there and interacting there. Okay, so the next steps for us is to modify that ELI, where I didn't have any way of corroborating what I had created, with the Akron data, because I do have information on where these kids had had elevated blood lead levels, and apply that to the parcels in Akron. I'd also like to do an analysis on residential mobility. So trying to understand if these homes are contributing to multiple children because people move out before abatement processes happen. I actually have a data set that's 5 years prior to the current one. I recently got that, so I'm able to kind of go back and look at 5 years before. I'd like to do geonarratives with residents to not only look at lead poisoning, but also look at other aspects of the built environment that affect health and safety. And then through the prevention opportunities, we're trying to work with the health department. If we are able to code all of these parcels based on an ELI, that could help them with their abatement process because they currently have funding through a HUD grant. It could also help with those that are placing people in different housing to educate them to say, you know what, these houses potentially pose a risk. Maybe we should get these tested before we have people live there. At least educate the new residents that there could be a problem so that they can empower them to do something for themselves. The other avenue is looking at the electronic medical record and possibly putting a flag for these certain addresses that pose a risk to inform the medical professionals that this could be a problem.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Yes, if a child has a test result that's above 5 micrograms per deciliter, then the health department gets involved and they come in and test and do a risk assessment process. Yes, absolutely. But unfortunately, they already have an elevated blood lead level. Yeah?
I think Maryland just is going to start testing every child for blood lead. And I'm wondering, do you happen to know how many states have been doing that? And what's the sort of state of national coverage for that sort of information and within the states?
That's a good question. I think actually in general, lead poisoning is kind of, I know in our area it's becoming more prominent. The Cleveland Plain Dealer just ran a huge expose on problems in that city. And there were issues with Freddie Gray out in Maryland who was poisoned as a child. So I think it's kind of bubbling back up, which I'm really happy to hear that. As far as, I know Chicago, actually they tested every child for years, up to the age of 4, I believe. So they have a fantastic data set. I mean, it's just required. If you're under 4, you're getting tested, which that's wonderful. The city of Rochester, I've done some reading on them, and they've actually created a registry of homes that are safe and homes that aren't safe. And they have an ordinance that requires landlords, if they want to have a child live there, rent to a child, then they're going to have to make sure it's lead safe.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.